You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
You're listening to the Rock Art Podcast. Join us every week for fascinating tales of rock art, adventure, and archaeology. Find our contact info in the show notes and send us your suggestions.
Hey, out there in Rock Art Podcast land, this is your host, Dr. Alan Garfinkel, and we're going to talk about consciousness, shamanism, rock art, and the mysterious nature of the supernatural and the paranormal. And I'm going to talk to Chris Webster about this, and it's going to be an interesting journey.
Okay, welcome to the show, everyone. If you're hearing my voice, this is Chris Webster. That means it's just Alan and I today, and we're going to talk on a topic that he brought up to me earlier, and I'm just going to let Alan introduce it. So, Alan, what are we talking about today?
I'm going to attempt to talk about Native American cosmology, specifically, call it shamanism, if you will, but the cosmological realm of Native people and how that relates to science and otherworldly phenomenon called quantum consciousness. How's that?
That sounds fascinating. I actually read quite a bit about this kind of thing, but in context of, say, physics and things like that. So I'm interested to see how you bring this around to this topic.
Well, I worked on a book for 4 years with a gentleman on this very topic. And it turns out that a second book that I'm writing as well with a medical doctor has to approach this particular topic as well in a chapter. And it's been rather difficult. I think one of the things is that when you're talking about quantum physics, you're dealing with a very esoteric topic and one that I'd say most people say, well, it's all this stuff is basically irrelevant to, what I have to do and why would I even want to go there. Scientists have discovered that there are elements of the universe, microscopic and megascopic elements, that they've done experiments on that don't operate based on any sort of logical, standard scientific principles.
That's right.
And those include elements that allow us to perhaps communicate to the universe, almost anywhere in the universe, in an instant, faster than the speed of light. Has to do with particular particles that appear to be paired together, and then when they're far distant, seem to still affect one another or can be communicated one another. And many other elements of what we would call special paranormal or supernatural experiences. So the way this works is, well, how does this have to anything to do with rock art or shamanism or anthropology or archaeology? Mm-hmm. Native people do not view the world as we do. And I know I've talked about this before on various podcasts. Mm-hmm. But science is a very, we call it a right-brained look at the world. Very logical. It's very organized. It's very consistent and testable. And the things I'm talking about are often left brain. What they relate to is something called remote viewing. Also works on telekinesis, where we can communicate over great distances or predict the future. Has to do with healing, using ceremonies and asking for supernatural guides who are animals, on and on and on. And this seems, we would say, well, this is all rather silly, Alan. This is, really something that is beyond the realm of science. But it really is not. If you're trying to understand the nature of rock art, its particular function, the representation of symbols, the fashioning of that rock art by medicine persons or people that we might call shamans, all of this comes into play. Shamans, and the term shamans, what they have found is when scientists have done extensive research cross-culturally, cultures all over the world have people that would be similar to shamans, medicine persons, people that have the ability, the supernatural ability, to somehow call on spirit guides or go into trance and talk to the ancestors, the people that had passed on, or that in turn are able to induce the help of certain animal spirits and supernatural agents to cure those who are deathly ill. And when we have studied this kind of behavior, we have found there's really something to it. So what I'm talking about is something that's beyond the physiological, beyond the brain. They call it mind, they call it soul, they call it this, you know, supernatural consciousness. And so the physicists, the scientists, have said that this is a hard problem. This is something that they've tried to work on in trying to understand human consciousness, because there's something above and beyond the physiological or conventional scientific realm that is available to us and that can't be explained as a function of rational thinking. Have you run across anything like this in your life or experiences, Chris?
I mean, not really, but I'm a very sort of critical thinking person, and I tend to reject everything that I don't understand.
Exactly. Exactly.
I don't tend to dwell on it. If I can't figure it out, then I just like reject it and I'll figure it out later. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
But that's just kind of my perspective on things. However, quantum physics, and Einstein actually called that entanglement, that communication at a distance, spooky action at a distance,
because spooky.
He didn't understand it.
He didn't understand, didn't want any part of it.
No, exactly. And in fact, I remember hearing the story, a very popular story about how relativity actually suffered for a while because he removed quantum physics from the theory of relativity, because he's like, this stuff is wacky. There's no way it can be in. And until it was basically kind of put back in a way, relativity didn't really make any sense. You know what I mean? And so you had to kind of look at the whole picture, so to speak. But yeah, it's quantum entanglement, and the idea of this interconnectedness is
so
fascinating. Yeah.
I have a hard time wrapping my mind around all of this. And when I get into the physics of it all or the scientific psychobabble, that's when I really lose it.
Yeah.
But when I do understand it intimately and am connected with it, when we're talking about issues of a shamanism or medicine persons and how that affects our world.
Yeah.
I keep thinking about these things called radical miracles. I don't know why that always gets me, and I find it interesting. I think this has come up once before in our conversations, but I can give you an interesting concrete example of what I'm talking about that still rings true. Well, I'm Catholic, and there is a supernatural experience that occurred and affected and created the Mexican people. I think that's unusual and interesting. The story goes that back in 1531, around the winter solstice, Juan Diego was walking to a church, And at that time, the ministers, the individuals who were trying to proselytize the native people, were failing miserably and trying to keep their heads about them because they feel like they were going to be killed at any moment. But as Juan Diego walks along, he sees an apparition and supposedly the Mother Mary, the mother of Jesus, and he talks to her, and he tells him to ask the bishop to create a church right where she is there at the top of Mount Tepeyac. Anyways, to make a long story short, he finally gets to meet the bishop after Mother Mary, as an apparition, shows him some roses that were growing there on the mountain in the dead of winter. And they're also roses that don't exist in the United States. They only exist over in Spain. And they're called Castilian roses. So he gets there, shows the bishop these Castilian roses, and then unfurls his smock. And on his coat is a depiction of what was going on right then. There's Mary in full color on his coat. And so this is, of course, a supernatural phenomenon. And after showing this to the Native Americans, they tended to believe and began to convert in massive numbers. The conversion was so immense. It was the largest conversion of a people to the Christian denomination in the history of the world. It was between 7 and 10 million people converted during that time. And the melding of both Indians and Spanish became the Mexican nationality. But independent of that, there's a more radical miracle that I find rather amazing. The coat of Juan Diego has been exhibited or manifested in the church since 1531. And scientists have studied this coat because of the images on it and found that it's not painted. It supernaturally adheres to the underlying botanical fabric. And even more remarkable, talk about remote viewing, ophthalmologists who looked at this particular picture found that within the eyes of the woman depicted on this rather coarse fabric are minuscule images of what she was seeing as the tilma, as the coat was unveiled. There's a picture of Juan Diego. There's a picture of Bishop Zumarraga. And it acts just scientifically in a way that they call it the Purkinje-Sansom effect. It's a physical effect that your eyes act as mirrors. So if you wanted a radical miracle or something about spirit figures or other things, then that's a physical, tangible manifestation that science would call a supernatural.
Indeed.
So there we'll call that the first section.
Sounds good. All right. With that, we'll see you on the other side. Back in a minute. Welcome back to episode 139 of the Rock Art Podcast, and we're talking about quantum consciousness in relation to shamanism and all kinds of other things. So, Alan, with what you ended segment one with, like, where does that bring us to?
I'm gonna tell you a story. I'm gonna go directly to a story given to us by a native medicine person. Okay. And the reason I'm talking about native medicine persons, and that this is probably the good piece that I missed here, is in studying rock art, there was a raging controversy for many decades about the origin of these paintings and rock drawings. And ultimately, it was demonstrated to a, I would say, very persuasively, that it was shamans, medicine persons, who were the artists that produced these images. Now, they in some instances did this after
using altered states of consciousness and using ethnogens, etc. And in other instances, did it as shamans, as medicine persons, after the fact, and probably not using any sort of, you know, chemistry or anything along those lines. But also, the images are meant to connect, or as living prayers, or as a connection to guardian spirits and to Native people. When they go and see these paintings or these rock drawings, they have a connection that these are living ancestral memorials, that they have agency, they have power, they can communicate with them, and they communicate back to them. And there's a viable connection that passes across the centuries and millennia that is felt and heard, and an emotional tether that is so strong that it elicits, you know, feelings of mm-hmm. pride, of sorrow, et cetera, et cetera. Anyways, I thought I would throw that in for good measure. I'm going to tell you a story. It's from a book that relating to dealing with remote viewing from the standpoint of a Native medicine person. The Native person that gave us this story was Wallace Black Elk. He was a medicine person of great renown. And it was a particular situation having to do finding a lost boy. An Indian couple had lost their 11-year-old son. He had fallen into the Missouri River, and for 2 weeks, divers could not locate his body. Friends convinced them that the only way that they were going to locate the body was actually go to a medicine person. So they indeed brought a sacred pipe to the reservation, asked Wallace's cousin to find him. A sacred pipe presentation was accepted, and Wallace, his father, and his cousin conducted a sweat lodge ceremony. Then they went off to the parents' home. People came in there and sat down. There was a sheriff there, and the father and mother came in. And so we sat down, and the individual acted as an interpreter for the spirit, and they asked for the spirit to come in. A song was sung, and the beaver spirit came in. He walked around. He was shaking, and water sprinkled all over us. Then he asked us what we wanted. So we said, there's a boy that lost his life in the water. Could you go and help us locate him? His father and mother had tears of sadness. They want to at least see if their son is truly dead and retrieve his body. And that's what they want. So what did the beaver spirit say? Okay, sing four songs. I'm going to leave. If I don't return by the fourth song, then you'll know that you have to find another spirit helper. So they sang the four songs. Everybody prayed. And the fourth song, guess who came back? The beaver. He shook that water off, and you could see his water tracks right there. Then he said, yes, I found him. He was buried underneath a stump in the sand, so I dug him out. There's a curve over there like a wall. There's a tree growing there also, so the roots stick out of that wall. So I took him there, and I hung him over those roots. Tomorrow, go to the river. You go there with that sacred pipe. Then you walk along that river. When you hear me splashing my tail, you pray and walk in that direction. You come to the edge of the water, and you look down, you stand there, and you'll see the remains. Then you signal, and they will come and help you to pick them up.
Right.
So we thanked the beaver, and he left. Next day, they went over there. We walked down the river. We heard the sound, the swoosh of the beaver's tail hitting the water. We turned around and headed in the direction of that sound. We prayed. We walked straight to the edge and looked down. And guess what? Pretty soon we saw him. His arm was hanging over that tree root, and the sheriff was there. He ran back to the radio. Pretty soon the boats came, and they got the son back, and the parents were overjoyed, not to see their dead son, but that they were able to retrieve the body.
Okay.
So why I told that story was, this is sort of a characteristic example of a medicine person, a shaman, using a divine supernatural power to connect to a alternate reality where there are spirit animals, animals that they know, they respect, and they connect with on a personal basis.
Right.
A shaman often had a personal animal spirit that they would call upon to help them in times of need or in times when they were curing or doing things that were asked of them in a supernatural way.
Mm-hmm. You know, what's interesting about this is, again, I just saw an article, I mean, literally just days ago, where some scientists, I can't remember where, have increased the distance with which they can communicate information through quantum entanglement. And it's up to, I mean, miles, many miles. And I mean, just a couple of years ago, it was, you know, millimeters, right?
Right, right.
Like not very, like centimeters.
Yeah, how can they do this, right?
Right. But here's the thing. They're having such a difficult time getting these two independent particles to entangle, and then, you know, then they're separated and then they can communicate information across each other. But here's the deal. Like nature can just do this in certain circumstances.
Oh, it can. And okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in certain circumstances, right? Yeah. There are entangled particles and we know
that. Yes, there are.
And it's like when we start thinking about this in context of, say, humanity or any living creatures, or an example of, you know, say a spirit animal situation or something like that, or communicating with ancestors or, you know, whatever the case may be. It's interesting to think, you know, what really is going on here? I mean, obviously the simple
explanation. Yeah. What's the takeaway?
There
is a reality to the non-ordinary reality. There really is.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I've studied these near-death experiences. I've read a lot of books on NDEs. And one of the most interesting ones that I've read was written by a medical doctor. And the medical doctor had a brain disease such that his brain completely shut down and was dead. Literally, he was dead on the table.
Wow.
And they weren't sure if they could ever bring him back.
Yeah.
During that time that he was dead and his brain was actually dead, it was non-functioning, he was able to see everyone in that operating room, the color of their, you know, whatever they were doing and what they were saying. Mm-hmm. And they brought him back to life and he was able to, you know, write a book about his experience and explain that this is one of the most, you know, robust examples of such an interesting entanglement of a supernatural nature where the brain was not functioning, but the mind or the soul or this supernatural alternate level of our being was somehow active and could perform and in fact could communicate with whatever our being is. Go ahead.
Now, I mean, that's where it is though, right? It's like, what's creating that connection? You know what I mean?
Right.
And is that connection ultimately, I mean, here's where the skeptic in me says, well, is that connection, you know, is it that connection literally just in your head? Is it something your brain is creating? Because on the one hand, our brains are incredibly powerful thinking machines.
But in this instance, his brain could not connect with anything. It was dead.
Sure. But dead to where our instruments couldn't read it.
Right.
But really?
Yeah. Right. Was it really, really dead?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I see what you're saying. So now the skeptic always in you would call it.
Yeah. It's interesting. So, hey, let's take one last break and then we'll continue.
We'll round it up.
Yep. On the last segment. Back in a minute. Welcome back. Rock Art Podcast, episode 139. And Alan, let's try to wrap up a discussion of quantum consciousness and just nail this topic in the last 10 minutes here. For
10 minutes. I'm gonna add one more story. This is a recent story from 2017, and it relates to native healing and spiritual practices. Mm-hmm. So it's a hard one to be skeptical about, but those are the ones I like. Radical miracles. In the spring of 2008, a former colleague and university professor visited me in my office. This was one you haven't heard, right? I had not seen her in years. Remarkably, as she walked into my office, closed the door behind her, she burst into tears, crying uncontrollably. I asked what was wrong. She told me she had been diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. I asked what I might do to help her. She responded by saying she knew that I researched Native American medicine ways, and she asked if I could consult a healer to see if someone might be able to help. The next day, I flew to Oklahoma City to meet with Beverly Patchell. She was a Creek woman who was University of Oklahoma Health Sciences. Beverly had been trained by several American Indian healers, had an in-depth knowledge of medicine ways of the indigenous people. She took me off to the homeland east of Tulsa. We visited healers. Two of them offered their help to assist my friend with cancer. Jim Henson stood up immediately saying, "We better pray for her right now." For 15 minutes, he prayed in Cherokee language. Then he began singing a common power song, and he gave his telephone number and asked her to call him. Next day, Beverly drove to Oklahoma City, where there was another conference, and she met with Kenneth and Rita Kuzwoon, both medicine persons. And turns out that the professor interviewed them both for 3 hours. When he finished the oral interview, he told him about his friend with cancer. Kenneth closed his eyes and began praying for a few minutes before blurting out, "We're going to get that cancer. We're going to kill it. We're going to be able to destroy it. You tell that woman I will do the ceremony for her, and I've been told she is going to be okay." Kenneth reported he had told the woman would be healed. Professor returned to California, told my friend what Kenneth had said, and told her that Kenneth and Rita stressed the point that she had to believe that healing was possible. I sent a photograph of the woman to Kenneth, who took it to the sweat lodge during the ceremony. 3 weeks after my return, my friend visited me again, told me that during her pre-op, the surgeons imaged her body and biopsied her. They could no longer find the cancer. The biopsy showed not one cancer cell. She was cancer-free and has been so since then. When I called Kenneth and Rita to explain the results, Kenneth said, "Huh, good, good." When I told Beverly about the outcome of this patient, she responded saying, "What did you expect? This is how our medicine works."
All right, then. Yeah.
So that's a good, another idiosyncratic,
Yeah.
Just one instance showing the power of sort of medicine ways and remote viewing, in the sense that they didn't even see this woman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
things happen. Yeah. Miracles happen.
Yeah, indeed. So,
here's the thing. Yeah.
I mean, miracles are only miracles until we can explain them, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
I mean, let's be honest, we're archaeologists, so we look back any number of years. I mean, obviously people like to bring up, say, Greek and Roman mythology, because they're the ones that had a god for everything.
Yeah. But then,
those ended up falling by the wayside, and we're not still worshiping Roman and Greek gods because, well, quite frankly, people stopped believing in them because, well, it was replaced by other religions, but also there's explanations for a lot of the things that they were trying to worship. You know what I mean?
Yes.
A lot of the reasons they were doing something, they were like, "Oh, well, actually, if we properly irrigate our fields and rotate them, then maybe things will grow. We don't have to, do some sort of ceremony to make that happen." You know what I mean?
Yes.
So, I think that's the way it goes with a lot of things. And I think that's as AI starts to take over the world, and as computers get smarter and as we get better computing power. I just found out that somebody found a new highest number of pi, which with 14 plus digits, might not mean something to a lot of people, but that's actually kind of a big mathematical deal. I just heard a few days ago. It's those kinds of discoveries are going to start coming fast and furious as we.
Right. And again, if you don't believe, often we don't receive. Now, I'm a rather religious soul, so I've had a number of what I call miraculous experiences in my life, and certainly people could call them coincidences or stuff that just happened. Mm-hmm.
Right.
My consciousness had somehow dreamed up this stuff. But then again, it's interesting. You know, there's all those scientific studies of prayer and how prayer actually affects the ability to heal people and to gain, you know, health again. So it's, you're living in, you're the right brain when I'm the left brain.
Probably. Yeah.
Yeah. But, I live in both worlds, and I do.
Right.
As a scientist, I present the data and the evidence, and then also try to use that evidence conceptually to tell a persuasive story based on the shreds and tatters that I'm able to put together from archaeology, anthropology, ethnography, linguistics, and everything else I can throw in the kitchen sink. That's been sort of the nature of our job, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, I think so.
And I think that's a good point to end on, right?
I think so. I mean, we're interested in hearing your thoughts as the listener. So feel free to write in. The contact info is in the show notes. Just let us know what you think about. I mean, I'm sure everybody's got some of their opinions, and we have some people who do like to give their thoughts on various shows on this network.
Yeah.
So I'm interested to hear what you think.
And they might want to share their experiences through podcast. They may even be people that are of native heritage. So indeed. I welcome them.
Indeed. All right.
Okay.
Well, thanks, Alan. Thanks for this. And we're going to have another episode with myself on it because we can't have other recording sessions. Well, my wife and I are over in the UK for the most of the month of March. So you're going to hear my voice again at some point later in the future. So we'll figure out what we're going to talk about there. But there are also a couple of other interviews coming up and scheduled. And we've got a bunch of stuff coming up down the pipeline. So with that, thanks a lot. And we'll see you next time.
God bless you. I'll see you in the flip flop.
Thanks for listening to the Rock Art Podcast with Dr. Alan Garfinkel and Chris Webster. Find show notes and contact information at www.arcpodnet.com/rockart. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sharing this podcast with your family and friends. The Archaeology Podcast Network is 10 years old this year. Our executive producer is Ashley Airy. Our social media coordinator is Matilda Siebrecht. And our chief editor is Rachel Roden. The Archaeology Podcast Network was co-founded by Chris Webster and Tristan Boyle in 2014 and is part of Cultura Media and DigTech LLC.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.